I think the voice is really important because, well, let me tell you a brief story of my own experience when I went to visit Chanter Alto, which is one of the high altitude places, very, very remote. By road, it took us almost all day to get there. They have electricity for about 2 hours a day at this place. We have satellite connection to the internet. Fine. But I found when I was observing people coming into our information center there, what they were doing essentially was using the telephone. That was really important to them. People were queuing up to use the telephone. And there was a loudspeaker so that if telephone calls were received for a person who was in the market physically, the administrator of the telecenter would shout over the loudspeaker and say, "Hey, Pedro, telephone!" And he would come running and answer the phone. So very important as a way of cementing family relationships, very important in health. For example, somebody's ill in the family, getting messages to the right people, and so on, really, really critical to them. And I also realized by observing, there was one computer in that center, and a few people came to use it, but the administrator of the center had to really guide them and help them. And one lady said, "This is not for me, this is for my children." And she wasn't being difficult in saying that. I think she was saying, you know, I have an established pattern of life now. I want my children to learn. But for me, it presents almost too many hurdles. And I have a difficult enough life anyway. And to me, that was saying, well, maybe there's another way. Maybe we can reach those kinds of people by voice. And so it was that kind of experience which sparked off the initial ideas, to be honest. The podcasting project, just to give you a bit more background, was started in September 2005 and formally finished in Peru in March 2006. There is an evaluation report written in Spanish, but I'm not fluent at reading Spanish. And so I've just been in communication with my team over there today, and they are producing an English language version. So the importance of that story is basically that we will have the evidence in English and we'll then be able to know a little bit more about the impact on who, and hopefully by things like gender and age and so on. We've tended to use very, very short broadcasts, I would say, you know, more 5 or 6 minutes, certainly, rather than 10 or 20 minutes. So quite short snippets. I think it works, and this is just my own intuitive reflections in a way, because as I say, I haven't read the formal evaluation as yet. Because of, first of all, attention spans, and secondly, because it's about a packet of information at a time, we can absorb a certain amount in a short time. Then we might be hungry for another short snippet the week after that, or whatever. So it's almost, in my mind, a serialization kind of concept, rather than, here it is, let's dump it on you all in one go, guys. So far, we've tended to use single voice, maybe a simple interview, two voices. But I'm envisaging, certainly when we spread things to Sri Lanka and Zimbabwe, that we can try to use multiple voices. And then we can try and work in stories, drama, and so on. And then I think it will have even a wider kind of audience appeal. I think the language, in terms of phraseology, vocabulary, complexity, those kinds of issues, has got to match. So, in other words, we're about communication, and in all communications, I think it's about matching the concepts, the vocabulary, the complexity, with that of the audience. And so our knowledge of the audience, and I say we try to work very participatively, therefore we do hopefully know something about the audience whilst we're working with them. We have to match, really, what is appropriate. And this is part of, to my mind, a living example of appropriate technology. So technology is not so much, in my mind, the hardware and the software here. It's about matching the whole process that goes with a technology. So if we talk about voice and podcasting or broadcasting, we're talking about the use of a particular language, be it Spanish or English, the phraseology, the complexity, simplicity, abstraction levels, all that sort of thing is part of what I think of as the technology, and therefore it's got to be appropriate to the set of circumstances with a particular community in mind. Basically, we do try to always, at the end of a project, or at, if it's a longer project, at periodic timescales. Get somebody who is not connected with the project to come in as a dispassionate observer and take certain, if you like, measurements and gather together some evidence and then reflect that back to us in a report. So I think that's a really important part of transparency, an important part of, if you like, the validity of any evidence that we then put forward to other agencies. We have to build up knowledge which is reputable and knowledge which is valid and validated by the evidence. And therefore, I think the role of independent observers and evaluators is crucial. So we do try to always learn. So the evaluation reports and so on out of the projects are very much fed back into either the next stage or the next generation, if you like, of projects in the future. So, for example, when we found that delivery of, if you like, our information, which we felt might be appropriate, didn't work, then we quickly changed that to a model of very much understanding what information and the how that information could be expressed in a more meaningful kind of way. And then we adapted the programs to that kind of model. And I think that's really important that we do that. You can look at information that's disseminated and say, well, how do we know that information is being used? Somebody might read it, fine, but they might ignore it also. Information to be useful needs to be translated into knowledge. And that is really the added value is how somebody can change what they do. That's really my working definition of knowledge. So if they can take some information and change what they do in practice, then that's really knowledge in action in my mind. So what we're seeing was not much evidence that people were doing that. When I was in Chanter Alto, which was about 18 months ago, in one of these Peruvian high Andean remote communities, I went there on market day, and market day attracts people from all the surrounding remote farms and so on. And in this particular location, people brought commodities to share and exchange on the market. They brought livestock to sell on the market and so on. And as I wandered around and just generally tried to observe what was happening, one of the really interesting things that really sticks in my memory is the number of people I saw, men in particular, who had a radio set round their neck. It was like a treasured possession. It could not be taken away from them. They were not going to lose it. It was round their neck, almost as a symbol. And people also were listening to this thing too. So that gave me a visual kind of impression how important radio was to them. I think the whole concept of what is a radio is perhaps undergoing some change and re-evaluation. Radio in a traditional sense of broadcast audio media via a capital-intensive radio station, if you like, and all the institutional frameworks and regulatory frameworks that go with that, I think that is becoming less significant, certainly in the developing world, because there are alternatives, and the alternatives are things like internet-based services. It might be simple downloads of audio files. It might be podcasting that we talked about earlier. It might be simple listen again facilities. In other words, the problem with traditional radio is it's on a particular time. And if you're not happen to be in the right place at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, you miss it. What the internet and newer technologies does for audio dissemination and reach to new audiences clearly is remove that geographical limit and also that time zone limit so that people can listen again at any time, so that people can download and listen everywhere. And of course we see the same thing happening in Western Europe, North America and so on. There we have a scenario whereby we listen to these things in our car. So I miss the news program because I happen to leave work at 6:30 and the news is on at 6. But hey, it doesn't matter because I downloaded everything to my PDA. My PDA then goes in my car and I listen to exactly the news items that I want to on my way home. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's going to happen in poorer countries, but a similar scenario of deferring the time periods and changing the geographic zones is going to happen in developing countries, and indeed is already happening. So the communities I've been talking about in the Northern Andes are experiencing some of that dimension of dislocation of time and geography. They are able to listen when they're out with their alpaca herd in a remote area when they're not in radio reception and they've got a small portable device with them. And that really is the essence of what modern, call it radio, communications can achieve.